Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today because how about them Bears?
Dan Wiederer
from the Chicago Tribune again.
Bears beat report and enterprise writer for the Chicago Tribune.
Your boy Dan Wiederer was on the radio last week with Speaks. Mm-hmm.
Co-host of the Take the North podcast.
I've said this before, playing quarterback in the NFL is a lot like marriage. It's not about being a hero all the time. It's about limiting your mistakes. And if you do make a mistake, make sure it's not a catastrophic one.
We want it to be a fast Friday and a fast focus Friday.
Dan Wiederer.
His name is Dan Wiederer. Wiederer time.
Bears.
The Take the North pod. Dan Wiederer talks football with you.
And we get the opportunity to talk football with Dan Wiederer. He does a great job for the Tribune. Also does a great job on the Take the North podcast. Our segment with Weeds is being brought to you by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric. For all the right reasons, call 866-4-SEASONS. Before we get into the football, one, it's nice to talk to you, Dan. Two, did you stick around London like a couple of other people did, or did you come right back?
No, sir. I had real-life responsibility back here on the home front, so I was back on Monday afternoon, quick and prompt.
Oh, my God. So you were like, hey, the next thing out, I'm leaving on.
Yeah, there's people that needed me back here at home, and maybe they didn't, but maybe I wanted to believe that they did, and I was back here on Monday. So real quick turnaround for me out there, but a pleasant trip and certainly enhanced by the way the Bears played on Sunday. Man, was that impressive.
And do we have a host change on the Take the North pod? Did I read that correctly, or was it just for the week, Dan?
No, you read that correctly. We do have Mark Grody as your new co-host here with me on the Take the North podcast. So he is the next man up, filling in for David Haw, who is on to bigger and better things, as always. And so we're thrilled to have Grody aboard. Actually, just got done taping a mailbag segment, which as soon as Studzinski gets that up and running, the people can hear our answers to all their pressing mail questions.
Yeah, as Sully said, he's gone over to the Chicago Haw Sports Network. That's where he is when he's not here hosting the show.
Well,
that's where it is.
Well, I just hope that I can find you guys to take the North Pod on my cable system. Wow. Dad.
Soon enough, Speaks. Soon enough.
All right, good.
Sit tight.
All right, good. So you were impressed with the offensive explosion, huh? I haven't been allowed to turn the page, so we can bask in that just for another moment. What's your biggest takeaway, Dan Wiederer, from the development of the offense and of Caleb through these 6 weeks now?
You can bask in that for another 5 days if you want. And I really do think that if anybody's got, 75 minutes to spare over the weekend, that going back and watching every offensive play from that game in London is going to make you feel really, really good, because that offense was humming. That offense responded to adversity. They had found their rhythm. And there's just a lot of really good stuff on the tape from Caleb and Speaks. We talked going into the year about the things they were asking him to do, which was first and foremost to be a distributor and to play point guard and to get the ball in the hands of his playmakers. And then when there were moments to be special, be special. Those plays against the Jacksonville Jaguars and that full library of offensive output that they had shows you a guy that can make high-level throws into NFL windows, shows you a guy that understands when to use his legs as a weapon and turn those into big plays, and shows you a guy who understands how to distribute the ball and keep your offense flowing. More impressive than anything to me was how quickly and how emphatically he responded after that really, really poor interception on what I thought was a terrific play call and a really well-designed play on that third and inches play that got intercepted. And I was wondering, okay, how is Caleb going to bounce back from this? Well, how's touchdown, 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 touchdown sound? Pretty good, right?
It sounds real good, because then your long snapper doesn't have to worry about snapping for punts.
Yeah.
Makes his life a lot easier. Speaks and I have been talking about this, the sharing that's gone on the offense. And I mean that both figuratively, literally, and on the field, where sure, this group of players has felt empowered enough to talk with their coaches to make their lives better and seemingly make the Bears' offense better. What do you make of the way that this has allowed the offense and Caleb to grow?
I love it, Lawrence. I really do, because it has kept the lines of communication open. And in this league, as easy as it sounds, there's a lot of times where those lines of communication get closed off, and somebody in the process is too stubborn to listen, or somebody is too shy to speak up. And this has been an open back and forth, you know, really for the last month. And honestly, going back to the spring when they were getting everything put together, I think you've got some really strong veteran leadership in your offensive captains and guys who understand how to take the reins and take the steering wheel and keep everything on course. And then you have a rookie quarterback who's just mature behind his years in understanding how much is required of him as a leader and how much his voice matters to make sure that everything is working for everybody else. It's really impressive to see how well Caleb connects with everybody in his orbit, and not the least of which is his coaches, who need to kind of tailor things to his liking and get the offense flowing in the right direction. And so I've been really encouraged at the way they've been able to troubleshoot, obviously, since that loss in Indy, which had us all a little bit on edge.
The last thing about Caleb, in at least for this line of conversation for me, Dan, is like the anticipatory throws, going through his progressions and like doing the big boy NFL quarterbacking from the pocket through week six. It's amazing how progressed he is. Is it not?
There's this quickness to it that is just, it's really impressive. There's some of those slant throws, some of those needed conversions on third and fourth down that he's able to see and find and hit with accuracy, really impressive. And I couldn't stop watching the two touchdown passes to Keenan Allen last week, because both of them are special in their own right. And I've said it multiple times now since the game that last year, the year before, the quarterback may not have thrown those passes and we would have pulled up the all 22 and we would have run the videos and we would have taken screenshots and we would have said, nobody's open. And Caleb said, well, I've got a high-level playmaker that is open, and he's NFL open, and I trust myself to put a ball in a spot where he can get it. And so you've got one back shoulder throw in the back of the end zone that is perfectly placed and well caught, and then that fade ball. I mean, that's as good as it gets in the league, and that's a touchdown, right? And then, you know, so when we talk about going touchdown, 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 that requires a level of high skill playmaking from your quarterback, and Caleb showed it, obviously, in London last weekend.
Yeah, the touch on that, I don't think the fade route gets talked about enough because of how the ball placement, there's only one guy that can catch the ball in that situation, yep. And that's exactly the way that the coaches would draw something like that up.
It's a filthy route by Keenan Allen, and you know it's a play that he probably makes if the ball's not perfect. But the fact that it was perfect, it certainly was really, really friendly and comfortable for Keenan to just be able to put his hands up, know that all he had to really do was secure the football and keep his feet down, and you've got a touchdown. And when you're able to function on that level, with that level of decisiveness, with that level of precision, man, you can unlock some pretty special things for your offense. Now, obviously, we would have liked to see that deep ball to DJ, the one that got intercepted, be put in a good spot. And then maybe we'd have been talking about a 40-point outing for the Bears, but we can't be picky because back-to-back five touchdown performances by the offense, not since 1956, fellas. That's a big, big deal for those of us who have sat through some really frustrating offensive afternoons.
Dan Wiederer took a deep dive into the defense in the Chicago Tribune. 21 or fewer points allowed for Matt Eberflus's defense for 12 straight games now. From the end of last year through the beginning of this one, that is the longest active streak in the league. That's compelling. We know what the competition has been this year, but there was some legit competition last year. So how real is the quality of this defense to your eyes?
Yeah, and in the second halves of games, they've allowed an average of 7.5 points per game after halftime. And so you've got a group that's finishing now, whew, right? And they finished in London against Jacksonville with three of their defensive backfield starters out. And so now you're having your depth tested and your backups responding to the challenge and being able to not only step in there and give you something, but to make plays. You know, Josh Blackwell gets a pick, Elijah Hicks recovers a fumble, and you've got guys contributing. And so it feels really real right now, Speaks, for that piece that you mentioned at chicagotribune.com. The first two categories I had to fill out were what's working and what's not. Well, it was really difficult to figure out what's not working for this defense right now, because they are top 10 right now in points allowed, fifth, yards allowed, seventh, takeaways, second, third down percentage, sixth, red zone percentage, eighth. So you've got a group that's doing it in every way imaginable right now, and then finding ways to finish games as well. And so, I think that we came into the year feeling like that they were going to have to be the engine of this team until the offense got off the ground. Well, now the offense seems to be catching up, and now you've got this sense that the true complementary football can be played when you get into that more daunting part of the schedule here coming in November.
Dan, we talked a little bit about this earlier in this week, and with Jalen Johnson, but I am amazed at the level of depth in the defensive backfield, to be specific, because you shouldn't have been able to go into that game without two of your of important pieces and then lose maybe the most important piece in your defensive backfield for what he can do and still come out with a dominant performance like that. It's incredible.
It is incredible. And sometimes what happens when your depth is tested in the secondary is your special teams play falls off. And we didn't see a real significant fall off in the special teams play either when you're putting other guys in to cover kicks and be in that realm of things as well. I was impressed with the depth of the secondary coming out of the spring and felt like Ryan Poles was going to have some really, really difficult decisions as he was putting the roster together in late August. And he's done a great job of keeping that depth fortified and having those guys ready. Testament also to John Hoke and Andre Curtis, who keep those guys ready, and David Overstreet as well as their defensive backs coaches. Those guys have done a nice job of preparing those next men up to be ready when their number is called. And we saw a really impressive performance against the Jaguars on Sunday.
So, Dan, if I was asking you what they need, you know, it's a different question than what's working and what's not working. Did you mention any pass rush stats when you rattled off those defensive stats? They went by fast to my ears, so apologies, because I know they're not top five or top 10, I don't believe, in sacks, but maybe they are in pressure rate. Where are they in that stuff, if you know?
Yeah, let me peek while I'm on with you, because I've had this up on my computer today. But, you know, look, like they could probably use a little bit more teeth in their pass rushers, no question. But it's not something where you're going, man, like they're just not creating any sort of, you know, havoc on opposing quarterbacks. They're sacks per pass attempt rank. They are ranked sixth right now, Speaks.
Wow.
So they're up there in terms of that, in terms of the opportunities they're getting, that they're being able to capitalize on that. So look, like there's areas to improve. And when you kind of bill yourself as a top five defense in the NFL, it means you have to be really good at everything. You can't just be pretty good at a bunch of things and say, yeah, we're a top five defense. And so this group set the bar really high for themselves. They're going to have to keep it there, and they're going to have to keep clearing it, because the competition is going to get harder. And again, like they've been relatively healthy up until the Jaguars game. Your depth is going to be tested on all three levels, and you better have some answers there. But so far, so good as a whole. And that's also credit to Matt Eberflus and Eric Washington for having that group ready week after week.
Well, yeah. And so sixth in the league in sacks per pass attempt is compelling. You can know from the eye test that a lot of it has been Jervon Dexter and Kyler Gordon on blitzes and others on well-timed blitzes. So is it worth believing in that, or do you consider making a deal for an edge rusher here in the final weeks before the trade deadline?
I consider everything, and you know, you have to, as a GM, explore everything and at least have internal discussions on what makes sense and what doesn't. The stopping point for a lot of this is when you have to give up, you know, you have to analyze what are we giving up from a draft capital standpoint, and what are we going to have to pay someone that we go out and trade for? And so sometimes that's where the conversation kind of hits a roadblock and you go, we're good with what we've got. Remember, when we got to the end of the preseason, Ryan Poles made two trades. They were lower profile, but they brought in Daryl Taylor from Seattle and traded a pick away to bring him in. And he's given them some impact in the first six games of the year. And they brought in Chris Williams as well. And so they've made a couple moves already. I think you're always going to have your feelers out and your lines in the water. But you just have to be very disciplined. And that's something that Ryan has been really, really good at for his 3 years since he became the general manager. And I think it's something that he'll stick with. The only thing that keeps me from sort of relaxing as someone that has to be on call for all these things is that he's made some high profile moves at the deadline the last 2 years, whether it be Roquan and Robert Quinn leaving and Chase Claypool coming in, or the big move for Montez a year ago. So you kind of sit at the edge of your seat and go, does he have something else lined up for 2024?
Then let's ask you something that we discussed as a show, and it's the idea of where the Bears are relative to what they do at the trade deadline. Like, is it possible that they are maybe outdoing their projections at 4-2, and that might say to them, even though they're in the best division in football, you know what? It's okay for us to take a risk here to try and bring in whoever, if it's Reddick or whoever, whoever the player is that we think can get us to the next level, instead of maybe waiting until the offseason because you have a little bit of an answer on what your quarterback is?
I think it's case by case. And I think the one thing that Ryan will be really intentional about, number one, besides the discipline part of things from his standpoint of making sure that you, you know, stay within your parameters and understand that you're trying to build a team for 2024, but you're also looking at your windows for 25, 26, 27, and trying to figure out how you can sustain a run of contention. The other part of this is you want to make sure that with a locker room that seems to be in a really, really healthy place, that you're very, very careful about what new you bring into that. And so I think that the Reddick situation would give me some pause, not just on the financial side of things, but look, like, this is a guy who spent his entire 2024 not real happy with his situation. And do you want to bring that into your locker room when you've got a lot of guys flowing in the right direction and feeling like everybody's on the same page and you've spent a lot of time building that up? So that's a conversation you'd have to have on that front and figure things out. I think there's going to be some temptation to want to go out and maybe make a splash just to try to accelerate how quickly you're getting to the point you want to get to. But we also saw in April when Ryan was feeling a little bit antsy about trying to go get Dunze, and his assistant GM said, stand pat, like, just relax, take a breath, let's sound this out, and stay on the road that we've kind of envisioned for a long time. So it'll be interesting to kind of feel how those dynamics play out as well.
Yeah, we know who the boss is. Could they fit Max Crosby's number? It would take some money moving, but the NFL is doing that more than they used to in terms of one team compensating for another. It's a $24 million salary. I think it's a $30 million cap hit. Would you give up the Carolina number two, which is essentially a first-round pick? Would you give up that Carolina two for Max Crosby? I don't even know if that's enough, actually.
Yeah, I don't think it would be enough. And that's where you get stuck, where the numbers have to match. You know, again, it's the number that you have to fit under your cap and try to figure out what kind of chess you'd have to play to get that there. And then the draft capital as well, which I like. Mm-hmm. You want to be protective of that, because this isn't about a 1 year flash and then you recede like the Bears so often do. This is about trying to build a team that you believe can contend for a long period of time, and having kind of the foresight to do two things at once, which is kind of, you know, live in the now, but understand that you have to plan for the future as well.
Every NFL team, no matter who you ask, when they talk about their buys, like, oh, you know what? This buy is coming at a great time, man. So we got to get healthy. It's a great. So if we use that as the template, why specifically is the bye good for the Bears right now?
There's two reasons I'd give you on that, and I think it's interesting to talk about, because number one, the Bears reported to training camp earlier than anybody else, right? And so that extra week added a grind to your lead up to the regular season. You had 7 weeks, you had to go to the Hall of Fame game, you had to do all these things. And there has been a grind to all of this. It's been an emotional first six games of the year as well, to where you come out of Indianapolis at 1-2 and there's a high level of anxiety in the city, and some of it kind of creeping into the building to the point where players had to speak up. And then you've gone on this 3-game winning streak and you've had this emotional high of that. And so there's a good opportunity to take a pause there. The other part of this is you've got this schedule kind of broken up in a way where the Thanksgiving Day game in Detroit then gives you the mini bye, you know, another 6 weeks up the road. And so now you're kind of breaking this 18-week season into 6-6-6, and you've got the opportunity there to kind of reset twice in a way that I think can be beneficial to the Bears. I know that's how they looked at it when the schedule came out in the spring, and I think they still feel that way, that this is going to be a really good way to kind of break this up, particularly when it comes to some of the younger players and Caleb specifically. I think it's a good time to reset. He's resetting on a high. He's being able to come back down to center, and he's got an opportunity now to see what worked and what didn't in the first six games of the year, and then come back for what is going to be a much hyped and probably an emotional return to DC next week against the Commanders in a state where he's had a little bit more time to prepare for it. And I think in that regard, that's pretty beneficial for them as well.
How interested are you in Vikings Lions?
Oh, really interested. I mean, look, like the Vikings have been probably the surprise team in the NFL. And so them being at home and the Lions trying to regroup with the loss of Aiden Hutchinson and trying to figure out what they do coming off that absolute trouncing of the Cowboys last week. It's a pretty cool game to watch. And then in the corner of my eyes in the afternoon slot, I will probably try to check in on Commanders Panthers. Not a real compelling matchup, but as we're looking ahead to Jaden versus Caleb, you want to kind of see how Jaden handles an opponent that we just saw a few weeks ago and see how similar it looks.
Well, you deserve a weekend to take a breath too. So enjoy your weekend off and we will talk to you next week.
Sounds great. Great talking to you guys. Enjoy the weekend.
That is Dan Wiederer. He does the Take the North podcast with our guy, Mark Grote. That's a great, great thing to have happen.
Yeah, and Grote has been awesome on our Bears hits all year long and deserves a lovely spot like that to talk Bears.
As many platforms as Mark Grote can be on, the better.
Lawrence, I was told a long time that I can't have my cake and eat it too. I don't really understand what that means, but there's a broadcaster in the NFL who's trying to have the cake and eat it too. And
yeah.
It's making me understand the phrase a little bit more.
Yeah, and there was some talk about what would happen when this became final, and now I think we're in a place where we can discuss it a little bit more and how you would feel if this person showed up at your favorite team's facility. So why don't we take a break and why don't we discuss it? Because it's a major story in the NFL this week. And you're right. I did not salute.
You didn't salute. Major story. It's Friday.
Major story this week in the NFL, and we should discuss it. And we will do it on the backside of this break next here on The Score.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, 3-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's funny because you've made this environment for me very stressful up here in the booth, so I understand where he's coming from.
Do you feel it?
No.
Feel the stress? No. Well, I was going to say, I thought stressful was not having Super Bowl rings.
Better work out those comedy chops. Since you're not going to be allowed to be critical as a broadcaster, better make sure you're funny and entertaining. We all know that's Tom Brady's strength, don't we, Lawrence?
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. I mean, it's hard to not... Let me see if I can say this without messing it up.
Okay. You're listening to Spiegelin Holmes on The Score.
When you think about Tom Brady, he's difficult to root for because he's won so much. So you kind of go into it going, what other things do you need, fam? Like, you need the adoration of the viewing public. But the thing that's weird, and I got to give props to Mike Florio, because Mike Florio has been talking about this since the summertime.
Since as soon as it became a rumor that his ownership stake in the Raiders was going to be approved and he'd be an acting owner and broadcaster at the same time.
Yeah, and the Raiders put out a video with Tom coming to the facility this past week, and he's excited. And I think ownership for him is great. I do think that it puts the NFL, Fox, and Brady in a really compromised situation. It is... If you're any other team, and especially the teams in the AFC West, do you want him in your facility? No. Now, the NFL has taken steps towards that. The NFL has been like, you can't be an owner and get to walk the grounds of the other facility with impunity.
Lawrence, he's not allowed to go to meetings with the other coaches. He's not allowed to do what everybody's been doing since John Madden made it commonplace in 1979.
Correct. Florio has added, should the rest of the broadcast team be allowed? Because under the current rules, they can share the information with Tom to get ready for the broadcast. He just can't be there in person to do it.
Yeah.
But that in itself, like, that's just...
Well, see, you're going to the compromised ownership stake, and I want to let you speak on that, because my annoyance is for the viewer, because as a lover of the broadcast and a devotee of the broadcast form, he is not going to be as good as he could be, because he's not going to be as informed as he could be, not allowed to go to those meetings, and he's not allowed to criticize the officials or other teams. As an owner, he's not allowed to do that. So we're supposed to be watching a broadcast knowing there's a guy who can't say the ref sucked?
So is he just as underprepared as Spiro Ditas is? Is he just like doing the Spiro Ditas?
Why are we taking shots? Is there, like,
we
look,
have for years.
Look, is there a backstory to this?
No, Lawrence, there's seldom a whiteboard or a backstory. They just like to rip people.
I enjoy Spiro Ditas. Yeah. I get Pac-12 After Dark, and Spiro would be there for me on Saturday nights.
He had a really, really bad Bears game like 3 years ago, and we've been tearing him a new one.
You know,
since.
For me, it's just been a go-to as like random play-by-play name. You know, Tanny's gone to Andrew Catalan. Don't pretend that you have any reason for your Andrew Catalan shots that you're taking.
Brian Anderson leveled up last night. Had himself a little moment.
Yeah, he did.
Big Christmas, baby.
Anyway, I think Brian Anderson's really good. But yeah, no, to your point, Lawrence, we have nothing against Spiro Ditas, except that it's a fun name to say as random NFL broadcast.
Okay, I think he's not that good. I think he's not that good.
I need to learn the landscape, and I'm learning every day.
Would you rather be thrown into the deep end or us do like a afternoon show 101 session with you one day?
An afternoon show 101 session would be fine.
My point is, there is no 101. It's just anyone can get it at any time.
It's 404.
Right? It's honors all the time. Honors classes.
Okay. Just like, was he here? Was he like a bad guy?
But if you say one good thing about Spiro Ditas, I swear to God, Lawrence Holmes,
I'm out as soon as I say something nice about Spiro Ditas.
Anyway, broadcast, I'm worried for the fans. I love the broadcast, blah, blah, blah. NFL and ownership being pissed off. Other teams in the division being pissed off.
Let me make it very... How about this? Would you want Tom Brady walking the hallways of Hallis Hall?
As an owner for the Raiders?
If he's getting ready to call... Bears Washington.
It's a great point.
Would you want him walking the halls? Now, look, he does have a relationship with Caleb Williams, and that I am for. I am for that, for Caleb, because he clearly admires how Tom gets down.
Let's play this out. I mean, I know it's Nance and Romo for Bears Commanders, but let's say it was Brady and Burkhart. If there are trade talks going on for Max Crosby from the Bears' perspective, and Tom Brady is walking your hallways and he's in there with poles. Oh, by the way, what would you do for the Max Crosby? And all of a sudden, an owner's in there talking to you, but it's under a broadcast aegis, and who knows what the hell, and he's Tom Brady, so what kind of effect is he having on you?
Or you can look at it from the perspective of players that you might trade, and Tom's getting inside information on the players that, like, in the scenario of Max Crosby.
Yes, make sure we get Austin Booker in that trade.
Right. It seems so superfluous. Like, all of it does. Fox had a great analyst on that team. That team as a whole, I thought, was really strong with Greg in there. No one's watching football because Tom Brady's calling it. Okay?
I think that is true. I think that is true. That there's like
if there are people who are watching it because of Tom Brady.
Oh my God, Tom Brady's doing the game. I got to check it out.
It's in the margins for what football is going to generate from a rating standpoint. I think there's and this is my criticism of Fox. there was a better way to use Tom Brady.
Because they just want him to be part of the portfolio and talk to the investors.
Absolutely.
And the advertisers.
Have him at upfronts and have him be able to hobnob with all the people that are going to give money to every division of Fox Entertainment. I get that. Him being on the games, it to me, it wouldn't have diminished that if you're saying that every week Tom Brady has a feature about football, similar to what College Game Day is doing with Nick Saban.
Sure.
If they, that's the way that, at least before it became ratified that he was going to be an owner, that's the way that I think that you could get the most out of him. I think it's where he's most comfortable, and I think it would have been an easier way to get him involved versus the way that it kind of feels like they're jamming this in, and he's got the commercial of, you know, who's telling me that I can't do this? And I get it. Like, he's thrived off of people telling him that he can't do stuff. It's what's made him the greatest that's ever done it.
Yeah.
It just seems
you can't do both, man. You can't do both.
It's very simple.
And the very proof of that is that we come to this segment pissed off about different angles of it. You're pissed off at the possible inequity from a league perspective, from team to team perspective, and I'm pissed off because I know that the way you get stuff in this game is to bust your ass. Right now, Boog Shambi and Doug Glanville have been busting their ass for 3 hours before every game, going to the clubhouse, going and talking to every single person that they can, working the relationships, trying to give you everything they can, and then walking that fine line of how much they can share and what it just informs to make the whole broadcast smarter, to literally bring you the best product possible. And Brady's not allowed to do that now.
Well, I think that Tom probably still is. Like, I have no doubts that he's grinding to get himself ready for games. It's just different. Now, maybe the argument can be made, he's Tom Brady. He can figure out what he needs to figure out by watching tape.
Oh, and he can just text some of these people. But we had Adam Amin sitting in right here, and we're able to ask him what he's learned about some of these coaches because he's been in meetings with them for several years.
But that's why I go back to the point of view of another team. Isn't he calling the Kansas City game this week?
100%.
I don't want you here.
Yeah, Kansas City and the Niners.
I don't want you here.
I'm sure Andy Reid doesn't want him there. He doesn't want the Raiders to be good by any bit of information he might glean. I gotta be pissed off.
It's a very strange position that the NFL ends up finding itself in because of this, and it didn't need to be this way. So I do wonder, once we have a year of the experiment, does Brady get tired of it? Because now, since he can be in the building in Las Vegas, is he just there? And is he trying desperately to make the Vegas Raiders better? And it just happens where he goes, you know what? I don't have time to do this other thing. I want to probably increase the amount of percentage of ownership that I have. I want the Raiders to be better at football.
Uh-huh.
I don't have time to start doing the rest of the stuff.
I bet you if he's got to choose one, he chooses the broadcasting.
You think so?
Yes.
Because I think the other way.
No, I think he would choose the broadcasting because that will satisfy the ego and the need for exposure and relevance more than the ownership stake. And there's ways to make the ownership stake seem like it's not real, which is what I assumed it was going to be anyway. I assumed it was going to be, sell a bunch back to Al Davis's kid, sell a bunch back. Like, that's what I think is going to happen. He's going to end up selling a bunch to Mark Davis or somebody else, and he being a minority owner or just below the line enough, or, you know, so he doesn't have to fall prey to those restrictions, but he's still set up. As soon as he decides to be done broadcasting, he kicks right back to being above board a full owner.
That's interesting because I feel like Tom Brady, the competitor, is going to be like, wait, I own this and it's trash.
We heard the competitor part come out on the broadcast.
There's no doubt
about
it.
So you can bring your competitive juices to that and try to get known as the best.
We're going to compete in the next segment. Categories makes his triumphant return. We'll see how Shane does this week. Next.
So, I think it's time to play the game.
We're playing the game?
Yes, we're playing the game.
Do we have to play the game?
What's the game?
game, thanks for asking, is categories. And we do it every week at 3:40 on a certain day. This week it's Friday. I am your host, Matt Spiegel. Lawrence Holmes, he won the game last week in his maiden voyage as a category contestant. Shane Reardon and Chris Tannehill also play.
I appreciate you guys throwing that first game. Thank you.
Would never do that.
You, the listener,
I hit 336 in categories last week.
Yeah, that's right. You did 334. You got one of three. You, the listener, get to play along as well. I announce the category, and then the three contestants go around the room naming a correct answer within the category until they get it wrong. Then they are out. Last one standing wins the category. Two of them are sports. One is pop culture based on something that came up during the week as well. You ready to go?
Have you done a subjective category yet?
Not yet. Okay. That's your lane, baby.
All right. Yeah. I'll do categories next week.
Okay, you can host next week. Outstanding. And Lawrence, you can host down the road, but no, we like to pass it around. Category number one. With all the incredible postseason home runs last night, it got me thinking about all the postseason home runs that have ever been hit and who has hit the most of them. I'm looking right now at a list of the top 25 in the most postseason home runs of all time. I will tell you that 12 of them are active. I'm giving you that hint so you understand, because a lot of rounds have been added in the past 20 years or so. So the top 25 in postseason home runs all time, 12 of the top 25 are active players. Lawrence Holmes, you get to go first.
Reggie Jackson.
Reggie Jackson is number 12 on the list of all-time postseason home runs. Chris Tannehill.
I thank you for that caveat of the extra rounds, because I feel like this guy wouldn't be had there not been extra rounds. Jose Altuve
is number two all time with 27 postseason home runs. Shane Reardon.
Derek Jeter.
Derek Jeter is number five all time with 20 postseason home runs.
Bernie Williams.
Number three all time with 22 postseason home runs and a fine, fine guitar player to boot. Chris Tannehill.
A guy mentioned in the group thread last night after that home run we saw reminded me of this guy in 04, Albert Pujols.
Number nine on the list.
05, I mean, yeah.
With 19 postseason home runs. Shane Reardon.
Alex Bregman.
Alex Bregman is number six all time with 19 postseason home runs.
Yordan.
Yordan Alvarez has not made the top 25.
Dang it!
How about my Don Alvarez?
No one's Don Alvarez is on this list. Not a single person's Don Alvarez.
Well, I'm just going to keep naming Astros. Carlos Correa.
Carlos Correa, number 10 on the list with 18. And I say, Chris Tannehill, if you're just going to keep naming Astros. Go ahead, Shane Reardon.
George Springer.
George Springer, number 8 on the list with 19 home runs. Tanny.
Justin Turner?
Justin Turner is number 25.
Yeah!
With 13 postseason home runs. Shane.
Manny Ramirez.
In number one, 29 postseason home runs for Manny Ramirez.
How about his teammate David Ortiz?
Number 15 with 17 postseason home runs. You guys are killing it. Shane.
Dustin Pedroia?
Dustin Pedroia, not enough. No, he is not a correct answer. Tanny, one more for the win.
When in doubt, go for an all-time great. How about Mickey Mantle?
Number 13 on the list with 18 home runs. That's just a guy who played an only World Series, too.
Yeah, that's absurd.
Absolutely absurd. Dude showed up in the big time. Others on the list, you got most of them. Kyle Schwarber, fourth all-time.
Are you serious?
Fourth all-time with 21 postseason home runs. And Corey Seager, Nelson Cruz, Bryce Harper, Jim Thome, number 16 on the list. All right, category number two. We've been talking a lot about the NFC North, which the Bears play in. There are big games that don't involve them this weekend. I'm looking at a list of the top passers, the most passing yards in the history of this division. So just since 2002, because it was not the NFC North before then. So the NFC North, since 2002, top 25 by passing yards, Chris Tannehill.
Aaron Rodgers.
Number one with 59,000 passing yards.
So is it... sorry for like the qualifier.
It's 2002
but
and on.
Yeah, but Do their yards count when they went to a different team?
No.
Or just, okay.
No. Just their yards by when they played for teams in this division. Since
2002
correct.
On.
Correct.
All right, so I feel like Brett Favre would still be there.
Number three with 29,000 okay. right. yards. Absolutely.
Matthew Stafford.
Number two with 45,000 yards. Do-do-do-da.
Jay Cutler.
Number four with 23,000 yards. Drunk, gun-running Jay Cutler.
Jared Goff still there?
Number
on the bottom?
Seven. Okay. Very high. Number seven with 13,000 yards. Gives you an indication of what this list really is.
Dante Culpepper.
Number six with 15,000 yards. Well done, men. Tanny.
Mitch Trubisky.
Number eight with 10,600 yards. Number eight in the history of the division.
How many deep are we going?
25. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Rex Grossman?
Rex Grossman, number 13 with 6,000 yards. I love this list. It's ridiculous. Go ahead, Lawrence.
All right, screw it. Josh McCown.
Josh McCown is number 24 with 2,200 yards.
So then you know Kyle Orton's going to be on there.
Number
then.
16 with 5,300 yards.
Was Matthew Stafford said already?
He was.
Okay. Sam Darnold.
Sam Darnold is not an answer. Sam Darnold is.
I don't know. He's had a really good first 6 weeks.
6 weeks doesn't cut it. Lawrence.
Justin Fields.
Number 11 with 6,600 yards in the history of the division.
Does Danny know he had that many?
I don't know.
Someone better tell him.
Danny.
Oh, man. Jim Miller?
There is no Jim Miller. Lawrence, for the win.
Oh, I met a different guy. No. That's not how it works.
No.
Kirk Cousins.
Kirk Cousins, you bet, is number five with 23,000 yards. We would have accepted.
I was going to say Brian Greasy was who I was sticking in my head.
No Brian Greasy. Brad Johnson, Case Keenum.
Charlie Batch on there?
No, Sean Hill, Goof Chops, as Mac used to call him. Teddy Bridgewater, John Kitna.
Jason Campbell on that list?
No, he's not. That was fun.
Didn't play enough games.
Yeah, all
Caleb
right.
Haney.
Here we go. Your third and final list. We've been talking a lot about CHSN. We've been talking about over-the-air TV, talking about cable and streaming and everything. I have in my hot little hands the most watched television networks of 2023. These are television networks.
Not streaming.
Not streaming platforms. Television networks that that attracted the most total viewers during the course of the year 2023.
Shane Reardon. Not specific to cable?
No.
Okay, so ESPN.
ESPN is number six.
NBC.
Number one.
ABC.
Number three.
CBS.
Number two.
TNT.
TNT is number 11.
Fox.
Fox is number four.
TBS.
TBS is number 14.
True TV.
True TV. True TV does not make the top 25.
Dang it, I thought because of the tournament.
Not True TV. Tanny.
TNT.
Was named already.
Whatever WCIU is, the like that network, the U.
Not the U, because that's just a local channel.
But like the national, whatever the national version of that is.
What is it? What's it called?
The CW.
CW is number 28. We'll give you the CW.
No, I don't want it.
Now you get it. You get it. Shane.
CNN.
CNN is number 22. Tanny.
I give up.
MSNBC.
MSNBC is number 8. Shane wins that category. So do we...
We all split.
Got one. All
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
All right. How about that? Fox News, Univision, HGTV, Telemundo.
Yeah. Univision. Oh, yeah.
Telemundo, the Hallmark Channel.
Don't say that. We're trying to beat Wojo.
TLC, the Discovery Channel, USA Network, Food Network would have been fine. Shane, Mr. Food Network.
I didn't need to get there yet. I was stacked.
We have a split. We have no tiebreaker. Tiebreakers to come.
I like it. Everyone wins. Everyone gets a participation
Everybody
trophy.
Gets a win. Well played, everyone.
When we come back, let's get into the trenches. Let's talk with Olin Kreutz. He had a crazy weekend last weekend. We'll ask him about that and the Bears next on The Score.
Oh, no. Is it? Yeah. Does it make you want to shake your fist?
What makes you want to shake my fist is the way you said, oh, no.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.